Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Cash That. This is your host, Joe Delara. Apologies for the slight delay here. We had a scenario in the Delara household. We thought baby might be coming right now. So was up a little bit late last night. Couldn't get this podcast up when I normally wanted to. But we are back home. Baby's not here yet. So I was like, let me get these plays out for the people. So with that, this episode is brought to you by our good friends at Props.Cash. Props.Cash, the absolute best tool in the business for player prop betting. And one of the most important features of props.cash that you guys can use right now is there's a playoff filter. You can filter for games specifically in the regular season, and you can filter for games specifically in the postseason. You can see how the rotations are a little bit different. You can see how the minutes played are different. You can see if there's a little bit of an uptick in assists, or if there's a downturn in assists, or if there's an uptick in scoring or rebounding, what have you. All of that you can get along with their own projections in the props.cash app and website for 25% off in your first month with code DELARA25. It's the absolute number one tool. I use it every single day, and you guys can too. So, the NBA playoffs are obviously in full force. Most of these series have played two games at this juncture. Tonight, we have games between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the New Orleans Pelicans, and the Miami Heat versus the Boston Celtics. I'm just going to say, look, Miami, like, good season for them, relatively, considering all the injuries they've had to deal with, what have you. They're drawing dead against Boston. There's just no chance here. Boston is listed as an insane favorite, like minus 3,000, minus 4,000. They're not going to lose this series. Stylistically, Miami is struggling against them, and they just don't really have the personnel between a lack of Jimmy Butler. Terry Rozier is also hurt. This is just a really, really rough time for them to be playing the Boston Celtics. With that being said, there are a couple of player props that I do think have some value here in this game. I'm going to start you guys off with that right now. First off, I like Kristaps Porzingis on a first quarter points ladder. You grab this at 4.5. You can get this at 5.5. I'm cool with either. He just crushes in the first quarter. He's averaging nearly 10 first quarter minutes per game, scoring 7 points in the first quarter per game as well. And in game one, he played almost 9 minutes and scored 7 points on 3 of 4 shooting. The thing is, he's extremely efficient. Boston really just generally is taking pretty efficient shots due to the offense that they're able to generate, especially early in the game against this Miami zone. And the 4.5 line is one he's exceeded in 71% of games this season. I think this is bumped up at this point since I posted on Twitter. And even at 5.5, that's still a number he's cleared in 64% of games. He really does set the tone early and often for the Boston Celtics. And it's been a strong matchup for him, in particular against Miami. He's hit this in 3 straight games against Miami with 7, 11, and 14 points in the first quarter in those 3. And the one miss that he did have this season was in one of his first games as a Celtic where, you know, you're trying to get into the rhythm. You're trying to figure out what the plays are. They're not running plays for you. Not a super surprising scenario. So since they've kind of gotten him a little bit more in the swing of things, just crushing this number against Miami. He's able to stretch the floor. It helps open up the passing lanes, helps open up driving lanes. And this is all super important against this Miami zone defense. So I like him to go over this. I would even take some alts. You can get 7+, like plus 170 at bet365. You can also grab maybe a little bit of 10+ as well. This is really just a great matchup for Porzingis. I also like Jason Tatum over 8.5 rebounds. So we grabbed him. I like the series leader bet. I like the over 8.1 rebounds per game in the playoffs. Tatum is just an excellent playoff rebounder. He's just totally different. He treats the game very differently. There's a little bit more effort, I think. And then there's also, I think, a concerted effort to have him rebound the basketball to kind of kickstart the offense a little bit. Boston likes when he takes the ball up the court. It helps create some mismatches, and it gives the Celtics an option where he could just drive right to the rack if he wanted to as well. And he's done this really well against Miami additionally. In 8 playoff games against Miami over the last 2 seasons, Tatum has exceeded 8.5 rebounds in 6 of 8 games while averaging 10.3 per game. In game one, Tatum grabbed 10 boards on 12 chances. So normally, if we see 10 boards, 12 chances, that's something that we'd be like, that's probably due for a little bit of regression. But when you actually, like, I was watching the game and I went through and watched some of the replays of like the individual rebound chances, right? Miami just doesn't really crash the offensive boards. They're one of the worst in the league actually at offensive rebounding. And what Tatum kind of does is he's getting a lot of these easy ones, like where nobody's boxing out. And his teammates are really just letting him grab the board. So this is a spot where nobody on Boston is really hunting for stats. Like, this is not Boston's not really a team like that. But Tatum, we just saw him hunt for that triple double, and he's not afraid to go grab his rebounds, go get his stats, fill the stat sheet for himself. So I think that this should really continue in the playoffs and should continue in game two. Miami, I think, is a little bit outclassed in this juncture. And with the offense probably kind of struggling a little bit against Boston's defense, I do think there's going to be plenty of rebounding opportunities for Tatum here, who basically records all of his rebounds on the defensive side of the ball as opposed to the offensive side of the ball. So those defensive rebounds are usually a little bit easier to come by, especially against this type of Miami team who really does like to get back to kind of defend instead of crashing the offensive glass. So I like Tatum to go over 8.5 rebounds tonight against the Miami Heat. Looking at some of these series overall, so I want to roadmap this podcast a little bit. We'll talk about the two games today briefly. So I already talked about Miami and Boston. We'll talk about Oklahoma City and New Orleans next. I have a player prop there that I like as well. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the series. There are some trends about teams that are, you know, up 2-0. We can kind of look at, we can take an assessment of where the lines are at for these teams, for these games. And we can try to really kind of see what, what, if anything, is actionable or what we can do to bet on this right now. Very excited about a variety of them, but we'll kind of do that. Then we will talk about some player prop bets for the games that we have coming up. I know that we kind of have lines actually for all these games coming up between game two, game three. We'll talk a little bit about adjustments, see what, if anything, teams might do to kind of swing things a little bit in their favor or to make adjustments in game three because they really just have to. And we'll try to attack it that way. So the Pelicans right now for tonight, they are -7.5 point underdogs. So they're +7.5. The Thunder are -7.5 at home. Oklahoma City won game one in a pretty thrilling game. It was really, I would honestly say it was arguably the most exciting game of the game ones. They were able to protect home court. New Orleans really had a chance to knock it down, to win that game, and just really couldn't get it done. I will say, though, that both of these teams' defenses were incredible. Incredible. Over this final score was 94-92. In terms of points per possession, Oklahoma City only scored 100 points per possession, whereas New Orleans scored 97.9 points per possession. Both teams kind of struggled in the offense. When we look at the scores overall, Trey Murphy led all scores for the New Orleans Pelicans, 44 minutes, 21 points, 4 boards, 2 assists. And when we look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, Shea, 28 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. He's actually kind of struggled to hit that 30-point line against the Pelicans. I think a lot of it has to do with the size, the versatility, the wing defenders that they have that they can throw at him. And it's kind of made life a little bit difficult for Shea. So if you're, if that's a little bit more difficult, Oklahoma City obviously has a ton of guys that can throw both McCollum and Ingram. You're going to see the offense kind of like jam up a little bit. I do like a couple plays here. One of which is Trey Murphy over 22.5 points plus rebounds. It's a line you could go over on points alone. A big reason that I like this here is that in game one, he played 44 minutes. I think he's arguably right now the team's second best player. You guys can infer what you want from that, but I think that he's really, really good. He's a factor on both sides of the floor. They need him for his offense and his defensive versatility. And when he's played without Zion, he's averaging 18 points, 5.6 rebounds, and 2.9 assists per game. The key here, though, like I said, is the minutes. This is only the fourth game all season he's played 40-plus minutes, and they were strong minutes. They were solid minutes. He basically rested 2 minutes a half. I really think that Oklahoma City has their hands full throwing their best point of attack defenders at both like McCollum, Brandon Ingram. And the thing about Murphy is like, he's not like he can score off the bounce. He's not the best at scoring off the bounce. So like, you don't need to throw your Lu Dort at him. You don't need to throw, you know, your Jalen Williams at him. That's not really what you're trying to do, right? What they're able to do, though, instead is with Murphy is he's a great catch and shoot type of guy. So it's like, get the ball out of Ingram's hands, get the ball out of McCollum's hand. Murphy's going to put the ball up. If you sag off of him a little bit, he's going to be able to get that jumper. He's going to be pretty successful. So couple that with the fact that, to me, especially in the playoffs, I think rebounds to a degree are like an effort stat coupled with time on the floor. I like him to go over 22.5 points plus rebounds. I think you could take 23.5 as well. Either seems to be fine to me. Another play that I was looking at is Josh Giddey under 20.5 points, rebounds, and assists. He started. This is something we've talked about extensively. Is he going to be able to stay on the floor? Giddey had a stat line of 20 minutes, 2 points, 3 boards, 3 assists. He just was not scoring at all. He was able to facilitate a little bit. The biggest thing here, though, for me, when I'm looking at what happened in this game for Giddey, is he just got played off the court. You needed a little bit more Kayson Wallace. You needed a bit more Isaiah Joe. They even got some minutes out of like Jalen Williams, the other Jalen Williams, and they got some minutes out of Gordon Hayward. I think this is important, especially the Jalen Williams part, right? So Jalen Williams, the other one, is center. And Valanciunas was incredible in this game. Valanciunas played 29 minutes, 13 points, 20 rebounds. 20 rebounds is insane. He had 27 rebounding chances. So he was dominating on the glass. Chet literally just cannot play the whole game. Chet played 32 minutes. What I do think is interesting is like Oklahoma City played a deep rotation. This is a lot. Like they played a ton of dudes. You don't normally see that in the playoffs. They played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. They played 11 man rotation. I have slight concerns about an 11 man rotation. I think that it's a little bit too much. I don't know if it's necessary. This team is young. They should be able to play pretty significant like minutes load, right? Jalen Williams, starter, he played 40 minutes. Shea played 39. Lu Dort played 35. Outside of that, like Chet played 32, which is about his normal rotation. Shea played a little bit extra. Jalen played a little bit extra. But then like you're going down the lineup, and I don't know if it's Dagnall trying to see like, all right, like I want to keep everybody in the flow. I don't think that I need to shrink this rotation to like 7 dudes or 8 dudes yet, because I want to be able to keep everybody's spirits up. I want to be able to keep playing everybody, and we think that we can still win this series in that instance. So I do think that that's probably notable. I also just like I like the series for Chet overall from a rebounding perspective. He had 15 points, 11 boards. I think that he does have to stay at home a little bit more, you know, instead of using his defensive versatility just because Valanciunas is such a big body, right? He's going to get bodied. It is what it is. But at the same time, that means he's going to have more rebounds. So his you can get him double-double, like plus 130. I do like that. The points, he's going to get the points. I'm not super worried about that. And then the rebounding, it'll get you a little bit extra juice there. So I do think it's interesting, and I think it's really notable that Dagnall is essentially playing the whole team, their normal rotations. And to me, that's I just find it interesting. I also think that it's a switch that Oklahoma City is going to be able to turn. Like right now, like I think maybe it's like you go out there game one, you play Dub, SGA, a little bit more expanded minutes, maybe a little bit more for Lu Dort too. Then, you know, they win game one, maybe they win game two, like whatever the circumstances are. Maybe like you don't show your cards exactly yet on like, who is our seventh guy? Who is our sixth guy off the bench? Who is our seventh guy off the bench? Who's our eighth guy off the bench? Who is like getting their minutes restricted? Like who is not going to see the floor? I think that's all important, especially for Oklahoma City for the next series. Like you don't want to show that type of thing while keeping everybody kind of in the rhythm, in the flow, as long as you're able to win these games. So I'm interested in that. I know Pelicans got hit a little bit harder. They opened plus 8.5. They got bet down to plus 7.5. I lean Pelicans here. Andrew O'Connor Watts, our good friend, NBA Watts, he said that he saw a line for Pelicans series price at plus 2.5 games at plus money. I'm not sure. I haven't seen that one myself, but I do really like that spot if you can grab it. I'm checking DraftKings right now. You can get Pelicans. Oh yeah, plus 2.5 games, plus 145 on DraftKings. You're basically betting, are they going to win two games in this series? I think that given game one, I don't see why not. I think that you could alternatively, you could bet over 5.5 games is plus 145. It's the same bet, realistically, unless you think, because there's just no other circumstance where this could go six games, really, where it either goes six or the Pelicans don't get to that threshold. But it's just another example of like trying to line shop, trying to see what the different bets are. And sometimes you can get different lines on the same thing, even though, you know, like just based on the way the algorithms are in the books. Because like I said, most of the time when books put out these lines, it's a lot of it's algorithmic. It's based on what the action is that gets hit. And it's something, one of the guys on Twitter, A1 Fantasy, good guy, good follow, in a couple group chats, he tweeted about how like CLV in player props now, especially, like, almost means nothing. And I kind of agree with him. Like, it's nice if you can get in early, obviously, like you can get a little bit better line, like whatever, but the limits on these bets and like what the holds are, if you put it out there, it's not like all of a sudden like a line gets bet, like there's 100 people that bet on the Knicks on the money line all at once. Like those bets are coming in. If we put out a bet, like even this Trey Murphy bet or like the Kristaps Porzingis one, for example, like if you're betting like on a pretty niche prop, right? Like Kristaps Porzingis over 4.5 first quarter points. If there's like 50 people that bet that all at once, you could have like fucking three people bet it all at once, but kind of hard. It's just going to move. There's no way around it. And it's not as like, I think it's a good indicator of like being able to recognize value early, getting at your plays early, whatever, but it doesn't have the same value as like, I think it used to have maybe, in terms of like saying like, oh, like this guy got it early, like it bumped, whatever. And I know that because it's like I put out plays, they move. Like, it is what it is. But at the same time, it doesn't necessarily mean that like the play was great. It just means that the play got a lot of action. So when you're looking at some of these lines, some of these books, like I could put out a bet. It says like, all right, the best price right now is DraftKings. By the time you get it, like if you get there 5 minutes later, you might be better off betting it on FanDuel because maybe FanDuel didn't get hit as hard because I recommended DraftKings because the line was better then. So like a line is minus 110 on DraftKings, minus 115 on FanDuel. By the time a bunch of people bet it, maybe it's minus 130 on DraftKings and still minus 115 on FanDuel. So just remember, like, even if I'm putting out a line there, don't worry, you could still line shop it because it might be different at the time of like that you're actually going to put in the bet. Now, I want to talk about these series as a whole. One of the trends, Matt Moore pointed this out, incredible trend. Home teams in the first round, so teams with home court advantage, that means obviously seeds 1, 2, 3, 4, that are up 2-0 in the series. You know what they win those series at? 89-5 in the first round. That's the stat. That is bonkers. That's basically saying that like, if you protected home court, you win. So it's interesting because it's always like, oh, the series doesn't start until the road team wins the game. It's kind of true, but I think it's actually more true that the road team wins the game in the first two games. So like we saw Indiana win a road game in game two. Super important win for them because then like you get out of this trend, you get out of this scenario. Same thing with Dallas. Like you're in a different series. The series kind of evened up. You've swung home court to your side, right? Right now, the teams that are up 4-0, let's just say Boston's there. Boston, I lied. When I said Boston was minus 2,000, that was the start. They're minus 20,000. This is insane. We're just gonna remove. We'll put them in this scenario just for now. Dallas Clippers 1-1, Thunder Pelicans 1-0, Oklahoma City Thunder at the time of this recording. Cavs up 2-0, minus 700. Knicks up 2-0, minus 450. Denver up 2-0, minus 1,100. Bucks minus 125. They've actually swung this. And I think part of why this line has swung in this way is that we talked about this earlier. Indiana's best chance to win the series was to win it fast and to get it up to an early lead, because that was the most likely scenario where maybe Giannis doesn't play. The longer the series goes, the more it's different. So, like, basically Milwaukee got to a point now where the series is a wash, right? Both teams have one win. They're in a best of five, and the leverage of having Giannis, or potentially having Giannis, is greater than over the course of a seven-game series where you might not have him for, like, the early portion of the game. So, like, the games where he was most likely to miss, those games are done now. And they were able to survive that 1-1. Notable there. Minnesota, up 2-0, minus 400. If you parlay those five teams to advance in the series, it's minus 110. I'm gonna take a bold take here, because Boston's not up 2-0 yet. They should be up 2-0, but I'm gonna take them out of this scenario, right? Four leg parlay: Cavs, Knicks, Nuggets, Wolves, minus 111 on DraftKings right now to advance. Those teams fit that trend of being home teams up in the series, 2-0, 89-5. All time. I think it's all time. It's a lot of, obviously a lot of matchups. if you believe that, they're like, if you look at this and you're like, that's not bad. That's not a bad way to try to tackle these teams. You've been able to see what's happened. You can make some adjustments. You can say, like, all right, like, do I really think that these teams can win? And I think that's the thing. Like, when you're looking at these games, right? Out of these four teams, the Magic, the Sixers, the Lakers, and the Suns, how many of those teams do you think can win four out of five games? I liked Orlando before. I think they're cooked. They're just totally cooked. They just cannot score. They just really cannot score. Philadelphia, probably the most dangerous in a way, like, of these teams, just based on the fact that you have Joel Embiid, you have Tyrese Maxey. They've lost some close games now to the Knicks. They've had the lead in these games. Maybe Philadelphia is a team that can kind of buck that trend, because they're not like they're not like your traditional seven seed. Maybe them. The Lakers just they've lost 10 games in a row to Denver, and you think they're going to win four out of five? Seems a little unrealistic. And then as for Phoenix is interesting, because Phoenix won all three games in the regular season and now is down 2-0. Minnesota's defense looks great. They're really limiting what Phoenix can do offensively. This is an interesting series, because I think a lot of people don't really buy Minnesota, especially when you look at this and you're like, oh, they're like the shortest. They're the shortest number out of all four of these teams, and they're up 2-0. But Phoenix just has that offensive tenacity to really put up some big numbers. I think the other thing is, when we look at this, though, you have to consider that Grayson Allen left with an injury. Definitely a concern for a team that just paid out a ton of money to keep Grayson Allen as a three-point specialist, basically. It's going to affect their rotation. It's going to affect their offense. It's going to affect their spacing. Those are all a couple things to consider. I think at minus 110, this is not a bad parlay, given the fact that, like, I don't love parlays, but at the number, as a way to get four teams up 2-0 with that type of historical trend, when you're watching these games, like, I haven't really seen anything where I'm like, yeah, no, for sure, like, they could do this. Because the problem, like, as good as I think Philly is, the problem with Philly is Embiid is just, he doesn't, like, I know he's putting up the numbers. I don't know if he's 100%. And as the series gets longer and longer and longer, and you grind against this New York team who's just going to bang with you on the interior, I don't think that that's going to get any easier for him. If you want to leave them out, you can. It obviously is going to change the number on the parlay. It becomes minus 182. But just a couple things that you could do if you wanted to tackle this, and maybe you hadn't really entered the market up until this point in time in round one. All right, so let's dive into a couple of these series coming up that we're kind of continuing with. The Cavs and the Magic, just literally just not exciting. This series is tough. It's tough to watch. It's tough to bet on. The Magic just really can't do anything offensively. A spot that I'm probably going to be looking at in this game is I'm going to be looking at both Franz and Paolo's turnovers. Brandon Anderson was on it first at the Action Network. It's just these guys, like, they just don't have anything else offensively. Everything has to run through Franz. It has to run through Paolo. It's probably going to be set at like 2.5 turnovers right now. You can get that at plus money for Franz. He just had 6 last game. He had 0 in game 1. So I think Franz is a little bit more like toss-up-y, right? I think that if I was going to play Franz, I might look to try to like taper down his points a little bit. This line's up to 19.5. I think that's still like a really high line, even given all the volume that he had in games 1 and 2. He took 15 and 17 shots. Just very tough spot for him defensively to kind of get going here. As for Paolo, Paolo's line is set at 4.5 turnovers. He had 9 and 6 turnovers in these 2 games. Paolo's the guy that I think you want to be betting if you want to be betting turnover props. Like, look, I know they're not available to everybody just given the way the states are and everything, but I do think that if you're going to be betting a spot, it's going to be Paolo turnovers 4.5. See if you can grab a plus money number. If not, you know, like, it kind of is what it is, but you do the best that you can with that. Looking at the, I have like zero interest in this series. It's just, they're going to get served on a platter to Boston. I really struggle to see this working out well for them. Looking at the next series, which I obviously have a huge interest in, is the New York Knicks. They are plus 4.5 against the Boston, or against the Philadelphia 76ers. New York's up 2-0 in the series. A lot of controversy around the end of game 2. Regarding missed fouls, like, whatever. This is a really interesting spot. Philly has to win this game. You can't go down 3-0. And, you know, maybe they come out desperate. It's part of what's keeping me from betting Knicks plus 4.5, even though I think that that probably would be the play. Embiid, the dimes have been there. He had a great game in game 2. 34 points, 10 boards, 5.5 assists. Or 6 assists, rather. Really solid game. The rebounding still just has not totally been there. You know, coming back from injury against this Knicks team who's, like, excellent on the glass, I don't think I would play an under. I think that for Embiid, just the way that his ceiling is, you know, you, especially in this type of game where it's like you have to win this game. I'm not interested in an under here. I will say that one player that I'm interested in, and I'm curious to see kind of how it goes, is Brunson. Brunson's had 2 of his worst shooting games of his career so far against the Philadelphia 76ers in games 1 and 2. He's played about 40 minutes a game. He's 8 for 26 and 8 for 29 from the field. Those are brutal, brutal numbers. But when we look at what he's been able to do against Philly, it's just not been very good. He's had 1 30-point game in his last 10, 1 game at 29. Every other game is under 25 points. They're actually under 24 points. He's only averaging 23.2 points per game against Philadelphia. It's been really, really rough for him. I will say, though, what I thought was notable is his rebounds kind of spiked a little bit. He had 7 and 8 in games 1 and 2. And his rebounding, he had, or in his assists, he had 7 and 6, right? Over his last 10 games, he's had 8 games of over 6.5 assists. I do think I'm a little bit interested in his rebounds plus assist prop. This is set at 11.5 right now. It's about even money, depending on the book. He's gone over this in 8 of 10 games against Philadelphia. When you look at this, one of the misses is at 11. He's averaging 12.6 rebounds and assists. The biggest thing in these head-to-head matchups against Philly is he's had some spikes in rebounding. He's had a couple games like 6, 5, 7. And actually, a lot of the games where he has gone really under that number have been games without Joel Embiid. For whatever reason, essentially what they're doing is what the Knicks have been able to do is they've been able to box out Embiid with their bigs, and then Brunson kind of flies in as a guard. Like, he's able to kind of secure the rebound. In looking at these games, right, out of those 10, in 3 of the 4 games without Joel Embiid, he's only had 2, 3, and 4 rebounds. When you look at the games with Joel Embiid, he's averaging 5.5 rebounds per game. So that's part of why I actually like the RA here. He's gone over in 5 of 6 games with Joel Embiid. I think this is a better way to tackle Brunson. You know the minutes are there. You know that they're trying to get out in transition because the half-court offense has really kind of struggled in this spot. I really do like the over 11.5 assists. That's a bet for me in this game. I think that New York has been, I think this is a tightly contested series. New York's just in the driver's seat based on the fact they're up 2-0. And I think this is going to be a very difficult task for Philadelphia to kind of climb out of it, even though Lowry's looked really good. Maxey's looked really good. Embiid has obviously looked really good. Tobias Harris has not looked good. He has struggled offensively. His points prop is down all the way to 12.5. He's actually gone under this in 7 straight games against the New York Knicks. So this has been a very, very tough matchup for Tobias Harris historically, and it kind of continues to be. Josh Hart, still an absolute wagon on the glass. His rebounds prop is up to 11.5. He's at 13 and 15 this series. We gave out that series rebounding leader. Looks like a bet that he might be able to cash. And as for Kyle Lowry, dude has been a menace, an absolute menace. Over 6.5 rebounds plus assists is a prop that I like. I even kind of like PRA as well. PRA is at 14.5. He's just playing so many minutes. He's playing so many minutes. Like when Lowry plays, let's filter this. When Lowry plays 30 minutes on the course of the season, he's hit his 6.5 rebounds and assist line, 69% of games. Nice. His PRA is a little bit lower, but I think that that has to do with the fact that like the things that he contributes, it's the hustle stats, it's the facilitating. That's kind of why I like the rebounds and assists. He did get a little banged up at the end of the game. It's Lowry, not sure if it's a flop, not really, like you don't really know, but he did look a little bit banged up. So that's the only reason to maybe have a little bit of hesitation, but I do like 6.5 RA in this game. Let's flip to the next game. We're looking at the Denver Nuggets versus the Los Angeles Lakers. One player that has just consistently cooked the Lakers is Michael Porter Jr., and he has just destroyed them on the glass. Michael Porter Jr.'s rebounds line is set at 6.5. I think it might have bumped up to 7.5 by the time of this recording. It looks like there's a 6.5 out there. Either way, the dude is a monster in these games against the Lakers. 6.5, he's gone over in 11 and 11 games. 7.5, he's gone over in 9 of 11 games. Never forget. This series, he's had 8 and 9. The rebounding chances aren't necessarily there, but he gets all these like weak side rebounds that are relatively uncontested. So I understand that the line is a little bit, he's close to the 7.5 line, but I think the line is still a bit short. I think if you really want to, the scoring's really been there for him. Over his last 4 games against the Lakers, he scored 22, 19, 25, 27. I don't mind like a PR play at 24.5 PR. I think that that's like another way you could tackle this just based on the scoring that he's kind of taken over. There's no Bruce Brown this year. Christian Brown is not the same scorer. The Nuggets bench is just not really as good. And with the fact that D'Angelo Russell is really like he has to be on the floor, the Lakers defense overall isn't able to switch as well. They're not able to defend as well. They've done a pretty good job. They've made this series once again feels close, even though Denver's up 2-0. But at the same time, they've kind of struggled to defend some of the shots that he's been able to take. So 17.5, it's a number he's only hit in 4 of 11 games, but those 4 are the last 4. So it's definitely something to look at. And even 2.5 threes, he's hit in 9 of 11 games against the Lakers. So there's, and the 2 misses are at 2. There's definitely a little bit of flexibility here if you want to do like a same game parlay, whether it's, you know, like 15 points or 3 threes or 2 threes and a couple and like 6 rebounds, something like that. There's some potential here for Michael Porter Jr. I will say, looking at the series overall, it's been really interesting because you're able to see like the rebound chances, right? Jokic is at 16 rebounds per game at 24.5 rebounding chances, and Anthony Davis at 12.5 and 19.5 rebounding chances. LeBron has actually not been the greatest rebounder in the series. He's only getting 13.5 chances per game. So it's definitely something to kind of keep an eye on, keep a look at. Especially when we look at these props, one of the things that I like to look at is obviously I always like to kind of take a peek at the series player props. Right now, Jokic is a consensus favorite, -475 compared to Anthony Davis at +310 to lead the series in rebounding. I think that this series feels like it's going to be short, right? It feels like it might be only 4 or 5 games. Jokic is averaging 16 rebounds a game. So he's got, and Anthony Davis is at 12 and a half. So Davis is at 25, AD, or Jokic is at 32. So that's a 7 rebound deficit. Right now, you can get, if you wanted to, you get Anthony Davis at +310 to lead the series in rebounding. I don't know if I can recommend it at that particular number. I'm going to check FanDuel real quick. They don't have it. They don't even have it up. So I think if you had a Jokic number and maybe you want to hedge it, that's fine. Especially at that number, given the fact that they were both like, you know, like +310 or so to, or +110 to lead the series in rebounding, +100. If you wanted to kind of do that, maybe this is an opportunity to do so. Either way, like it's pretty much a 2-horse race in the spot. So I'm not super interested in either of those. I will say that one of the things we can kind of look for here though, is looking at the series overall, the Lakers just have, like, even when they were up 20, it felt like it was like, are the Nuggets going to come back? Like, are they going to come back? Like, they might be able to come back. And it sounds crazy to even put that out into the world, but that was the way it felt. Like, you were watching the game and you were like, I don't know if they're going to win this game. Like, I really don't know. And I think that was like a super interesting, like, kind of like a nuance, right? It was like, you just didn't have enough faith in the Lakers, because like if Denver wants to turn it up, they just continuously seem to dominate in this spot. They've dominated the Lakers over the past couple of seasons, and they've really just had their number. And that type of win, it was just like you ripped their heart out after coming back down 20. Jamal Murray, buzzer beater, just Lakers feel like they are down bad. I think that this is just a tough game. This is a tough series for them. I do think that like strategic wise, right? This team, the Denver Nuggets team, was the team in the West that you felt like Lakers just can't beat them. It's going to be brutal. I think I know it's a first round exit probably. I think you're better off just playing them first round instead of getting to the conference finals, playing all those games, putting all that wear and tear on like an older LeBron James. But the thing that's happened here is when we're watching the series, LeBron has to create for everybody. D'Lo is able to do a little bit, but Anthony Davis is just completely unable to create his own shot. And it's, you know, it really stalls the offense. It makes it nearly impossible for the team to really succeed. This is a thing that I think is interesting. Right now, for most points in a series, there's some pretty interesting numbers here, right? So you can actually get on DraftKings, Jokic is +120. Next best for Anthony Davis is +175. LeBron is +500 on each. Jamal Murray is +2,500. Looking at the series, Jokic has 59 points. Murray has 42. Michael Porter Jr. has 41. Anthony Davis has 64. LeBron is 53. AD is in the lead and has a longer number than Jokic right now. I know that we kind of always are like, oh, well, like Jokic should do more. Jokic could maybe Jokic has a bigger game coming up, what have you. When we look at what Jokic has just done, he scored 32 and 27 points in these two games against the Lakers. He's been pretty consistent over the past couple of seasons. Even in the playoffs, he averaged 28.3 points per game. So he's like kind of right around that number. I think Anthony Davis here, he has scored in these head-to-head matchups. He's averaging 28.5. He's scored 32 and 32 points this series. And he's been fairly efficient, right? He's 12-23, 14 of 19 from the floor. And then when we kind of pivot and look at LeBron, because LeBron's LeBron's really like the only other guy that has like a great chance. He's been really consistently at like 25, 26, 27, right? He's got one 40-point spike back in the final game against the Nuggets last playoffs. He scored 40 points. And then looking at Jamal Murray has the ability to explode. He has the ability to really like get up some crazy shots. The volume's also there. 9 of 24 in both games this series. I think when you look at this, right, these players are separated by, you know, Anthony Davis has 64. Murray's got 42. Murray's 22 points behind AD. I think that's a little bit tough to catch up, even though I think the number is kind of juicy, right? But like if you're betting on Murray, you're kind of betting on the series to go long. And I think that that's unrealistic, right? It feels unrealistic that this series is going to go longer than 5 or 6 games. Given that, I think that you need to look at the shorter options. Jokic, 59 points, not in the lead, but is the favorite. Anthony Davis, 64 points, in the lead, not the favorite. LeBron James, 53 points, not the favorite. And he trails, obviously, Anthony Davis by 11 points and Jokic by 6. I think that there's probably a little bit of value on the two guys on the Lakers, specifically because of the fact that the series, I think, is going to be shorter. I think they're going to be a little bit more desperate. And honestly, even if they both go off, it doesn't mean that they're going to win the game. Whereas with Denver, they have a little bit more of a balanced attack this year. They're winning these games. Murray hasn't even played that well. I think that we're probably due for a Murray game. If we have a Murray game, that's probably going to impact what Jokic's final output is. And, you know, maybe we just have a scenario where AD and LeBron are kind of going for it. So I think if you were looking to play here, I really don't hate a play on Anthony Davis at plus 175. And I don't hate a play on LeBron James at plus 500 either. I think that LeBron is probably going to leave it all out on the floor in whatever the final game is, and you're going to see that spike. And that's a little bit of the concern that I have with Anthony Davis. Like if the series gets out of hand, I don't know if he's going to be the one that's really putting up the numbers for the Lakers. So just wanted to touch on that. Looking at the next game, we have the Clippers and the Mavs. The Clippers are plus three and a half on the road. We saw Kawhi Leonard come back, and it was a tough game. That game was absolute nails. The Clippers won game one, obviously dropped game two to the Dallas Mavericks. The thing that we thought was interesting was the Clippers just couldn't make a shot. They had a 41.4% effective field goal percentage, which is one of the worst numbers, period, that you could have, like in a game. It just don't happen. Both teams' offenses really, really, really got stuck in the mud. The reason, though, for Dallas is they turn the ball over a lot. 15.4% turnover ratio compared to 9.9% turnover ratio for the Clippers. The other thing is Dallas, they crushed from three. 39% of their shots came from deep. They shot 43.8% from three. Those are some tough numbers, right? the one thing that I will say, looking at the Clippers, this is a pretty, like, you got a lot of vets there. They are not going to be worried about going on the road, playing in Dallas. I think they're going to be more than comfortable. This number at +3.5 seems a little long, given the way that these two teams have played. This has been all Luka, all Kyrie. Luka's played 46 minutes in the last game. Kyrie played 42 minutes in the last game. They got some good shooting from PJ Washington, 3 for 4 from three. And then Derek Jones Jr. scored an amazing 10 points. On 4 of 6 shooting. They don't have a lot else. Tim Hardaway Jr. also got hurt. Didn't come back. Played 6 minutes. So it's a little bit tougher, I think, for Dallas to like find a great path. Whereas the Clippers, nobody really went crazy. Harden, 22 points. Paul George, 22 points. Kawhi Leonard, 15 points. Zubac, 13 points. They hung in there. But nobody really had a great game where you're like, oh yeah, like they crushed. Kawhi really struggled. Like he was really rusty. But the defense was nails at the end of the game. So, you know, Luka did Luka things. But at the end of the day, you know, they're going to get some rest. This game is not until, Friday. I think +3.5 on the Clippers is probably the right play here. Then that's probably the way that I'd be looking. I have some Dallas tickets. I like Dallas in the series. That was something that I was looking at. I didn't know what the Kawhi injury was going to look like. but now we kind of have a better idea. Like, he's back. He's playing pretty significant minutes. He played 35 minutes. It's definitely something to be aware of. And I just think that the +3.5 is the sharp side here against the Dallas Mavericks. Looking at the Suns versus the Wolves, Minnesota +4 on the road. I think this is like a must win game for Phoenix for a variety of different reasons. If they lose the series, they get swept in the first round, especially when you have to wonder, it begs the question, is like Durant going to ask out? Is Booker going to ask out? Like, what is the scenario here? Because this is a team that just really has no other assets. Looking at some of the props, one of the things that I think is interesting is that Anthony Edwards, like, he really struggled in game two after having that like explosive game one. And it was one of the things that we had considered because Ant had really struggled against Phoenix over the course of the entire season. His points prop is set at 24.5 here in game two. Jaden McDaniels went bonkers, right? Absolutely bonkers in game two. And Yusuf Nurkic also had a solid game. But the Suns overall, like, really, really struggled in game two. The Suns scored 97.9 points per 100 possessions with a 21.3% turnover ratio. Cleaning the glass has that as a zero percentile. It is like the worst percentile you could possibly have. The thing about both of these teams, though, they don't shoot threes. Phoenix took 25% of their shots from three. Minnesota took 34% of their shots from three. And both teams took a lot of shots at the rim, but it's hard to take shots at the rim against defensive players like Nurkic and Gobert. So even though they're scoring, you know, like 62.5% for Phoenix and 69.2% for Minnesota at the rim, at the rack, those are still tougher shots. And they're not even that high in terms of the percentiles for like what you should be shooting there. Like, they're above average. They're above the 50th percentile, but they're not overwhelming in any way, shape, or form. Beal, 14 points. Booker, 20. Durant, 18. They had one 20-point scorer in Devin Booker. Jaden McDaniels scored 25. Gobert scored 18. Ant, 15. Mike Conley, 18. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, 10. Karl Anthony Towns, 12. Towns was in a lot of foul trouble. Limited his minutes. Minnesota played fine. The +4 is juicy. I think that given my future scenario, and a lot of yours as well, given the fact that we kind of talked about this, but Minnesota at like 80-1, 60-1, whatever, if you have those tickets, I'm probably not betting this game. I lean Minnesota. I think, you know, you could play it in the parlay that we talked about earlier for the series line. I do think this is a spot where Phoenix like has to lay it all out on the table. They did win the season series 3-0 in the regular season, but I do think that this is a really, it's been very, very tough for Phoenix. And I haven't seen anything where I'm like, they're doing it. They're doing something. Cause Minnesota's kind of won these games both like relatively handily. They've controlled the game. They've dictated the pace. And they just won this game without a good Anthony Edwards game, without a good Karl Anthony Towns game. That's notable. That's really, really notable. And I know that Phoenix didn't have a really good game from anybody, but at the same time, like, Minnesota just doesn't really have offensive weapons. And the two that they have, if they aren't scoring and they still win, it seems rough for the Phoenix Suns here. Finally, I want to talk about the Bucks versus the Pacers. I'm probably going to be on Halliburton assists again. Halliburton has averaged 20.5 potential assists throughout the series, averaging 10 assists a game. Assist prop is at 10.5. I'm going to like it again. And I think I'm going to like it even more if Giannis plays. I think that the way that they play defense is going to allow a couple more assists to be dished out. It's going to be a little bit harder for Halliburton to score at the rack. The one thing that I would tread lightly with is Siakam. Siakam's averaging a whopping number of points here. He's just crushing right now in the playoffs. And his points prop for this game coming up is set at 27.5. He scored 36 and 37 points in these two games. Incredible volume too. 25 shots, 23 shots, extremely efficient in terms of his field goal percentage, 60 and 70%. He's making threes. He's not even getting to the line too much. He got to the line 10 times, 5 of 10 from the line in game one, only 2 of 3 in game two. The reason I say tread carefully is if Giannis comes back, it's going to change the defensive like nexus of what the Bucks are going to be able to do. This game is not until Friday. Given that the game is not until Friday, maybe we see Giannis come back. Maybe we see him try to set the tempo on the road against the Indiana Pacers. As like, you know, it's like, oh, like we're home. We're going to be, we even up the series. We're riding high, blah, blah. Giannis is back. And then it's like, it's deflating. We have to see if Giannis is going to play, or maybe Milwaukee will save him if they go down in the series at all and try to give him as much rest as they can, like they did in previous series, like last year, where they tried to do it against Miami. It just obviously was a little bit too late. You have to wonder if they're going to try to do that in this spot against Indiana as well. So I'm going to be looking at Halliburton assists, and I'm going to be cautiously waiting to see whether or not I'm going to play a little bit of Siakam points. I will say that Nesmith is a guy who I'm interested in terms of his threes, over 1.5 threes, I think could be a good spot. He's going to get plenty of opportunities there. He can be a primary defender of Giannis. It's not a great primary option, but it is an option. Couple that with Pascal Siakam to kind of avoid a little bit of foul trouble on Siakam by throwing another body on Giannis. So those are a couple of things I'm looking at in this series. I'm trying to see what the pivots are. I will say that Damian Lillard has been incredible throughout these two games, 35 points, 34 points. I think the fact that they're like hedging his line right now at 28.5 for the points prop is indicative of the fact that they don't know whether Giannis is going to play. If Giannis does play, I'm probably smashing this under. I want this under. When he's played these games with Giannis, he scored 24, 21, 13, and 23 points against the Indiana Pacers. Obviously, a little bit different scenario, regular season, different coach, what have you. But I do think that that's definitely a spot. Additionally, in terms of the assists, his assist line's at 5.5. He consistently is going under this. He's had five or fewer in four straight games. That's another kind of angle to kind of look at here. So those are just a couple of the things that I'm thinking about for this Milwaukee versus Indiana series and as we get to kind of game three. So to recap, you know, that those are all the plays that I'm looking for in these games coming up. We talked about a couple prop angles. We talked about a couple spread angles. We talked about a couple series angles. This is our round two update. As for a pods and rec, I'm going to recommend chicken and dumplings. Just had chicken and dumplings the other day. My grandmother-in-law made them. Great. It was a very hearty meal. It was a nice meal. Like it felt fresh. Like I just felt good. I felt warm on the inside. It was like just a relieving type of meal. So really enjoyed it. That's my recommendation for you guys. And once again, this episode is brought to you by our good friends at props.cash. Props.cash, the absolute best in the business in terms of player prop marketing tools as well. The player prop angles that you can look at between the playoff and regular season filters, the filters with and without players, you can get so much more information. You can get so granular with it that you can really try to figure out, like, am I missing something? What am I seeing here? Is this important? Is this actionable? And you can get that for 25% off your first month with code DELERA25. So get that props.cash, get your chicken and dumplings, and let's load up for the rest of round one for the NBA playoffs. And let's continue to cash that.